At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, imagine this for a second. Your phone, it subtly suggests an answer to a question you were just about to ask. Or maybe it whips up a custom image from just a few words you type. Or, get this, it tells you what's in your pantry and, like, creates a recipe on the spot, all without you really doing much.
Yeah, almost like it knows what you're thinking sometimes.
Exactly. It's almost, well, sentient feels like a strong word, but it's definitely anticipating things in a way that would have sounded like pure science fiction just a few years back. So welcome to the deep dive. Today we're really plunging into this idea, the sentient pocket, AI's on-device revolution in the mobile world of 2025. And this isn't just, you know, shiny new features we're talking about.
Yeah,
a really fundamental shift happening right inside the phone in your pocket. It's changing how you interact with technology and, honestly, how these huge tech companies are battling it out for your digital life. Our mission today, really, is to cut through all the noise, all the hype. We want to give you a shortcut to being properly informed about this whole on-device AI transformation. We've dug through the articles, the research, the notes, and we're going to pull out the most important bits, the surprising facts, so you walk away understanding not just what's happening, but, crucially, why it matters to you.
Exactly. You should leave this with a much clearer picture of the new hardware that's actually driving all this and the big strategic showdown happening, especially between players like Google and Apple.
Right.
Plus, how the user experience itself is being totally redefined. And importantly, the ethical stuff, the considerations that are shaping our digital future. This deep dive, it really reveals how powerful on-device AI is, shaking up the competition and making user trust, well, maybe the most valuable thing there is now.
Okay, so to really get our heads around this massive shift, we kind of need to start at the bottom layer, right? The foundation, the hardware, what's actually changed inside our phones that's making all this on-device AI stuff possible, like right now in 2025.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. This whole mobile AI revolution for 2025, it's fundamentally built on a hardware pivot. Chip designers, they're not just chasing, you know, raw CPU speeds anymore or cramming more megapixels onto cameras. They've really aggressively reprioritized. The focus now is on accelerating AI workloads. That's what's making genuine, powerful on-device intelligence a reality. It's the dawn of, well, what we're calling the TOPS race.
TOPS race. Okay, what's TOPS?
Right, good question. TOPS stands for tera operations per second. It's basically a measure of how many trillions of AI calculations a chip can perform every single second.
Trillions, wow.
Yeah, so the higher the TOPS number, the more intelligently, and more importantly, the more instantly your phone can process information without needing to constantly call back to the cloud.
Got it. So more TOPS equals smarter, faster, on-device AI. And who's leading this race?
Well, our arm is a huge player here. They unveiled their LUMEX compute subsystem, they call it CSS, back in September 2025. And this wasn't just like a small update. No, it was more like a complete re-architecting of mobile computing, specifically designed to put AI right at the very core.
Okay, so what makes it so special? What's the breakthrough?
A key part is something called the SME2-enabled ARM C1 CPU cluster. Now, that's a mouthful, but what it means is up to a 5x performance boost for real-world AI tasks.
5x? That's massive.
Yeah, it really is. It means things that previously had to happen in the cloud, you know, needing a constant internet connection, can now happen directly on your device. Think about 4.7x lower latency for anything involving speech recognition or commands.
Wow.
Or 2.8x faster audio generation. You could have, say, a smart yoga tutor app on your phone giving you instant, really precise feedback on your poses without absolutely killing your battery. That specific example showed a 2.4x boost in text-speech performance. Or for photos, a neural camera denoising that's cleaning up noise in low light running at over 120 frames per second in 1080p video. Yeah, or 30 frames per second in 4K, all on a single processor core. That means crystal clear images even when it's really dark.
Okay, that level of tech sounds amazing, but does it mean it's only going into the super expensive top-of-line flagship phones? Or is this something we'll see more broadly?
That's a really important question. And actually, Arm's strategy is tiered, which is, well, it's crucial for getting this tech out there widely. They have the C1 Ultra for the absolute flagships, yes.
Right.
But then there's the C1 Premium for sort of the sub-flagship devices, C1 Pro for phones focused on efficiency, and even a C1 Nano designed for wearables like smartwatches.
Ah, okay.
So it signals this really deliberate trickle-down effect. They're embedding AI capabilities across pretty much all price points. The goal is making these intelligent features accessible to, well, hopefully everyone eventually.
And what about the people actually building the apps, the developers? Does this new ARM architecture make their lives easier or harder?
That's another key aspect. What's really noteworthy is the deep integration of something called Clydie AI into all the major development frameworks, things like PyTorch, ExecuTorch, Google Litter, Microsoft ONNX Runtime.
Okay.
Basically, it means apps can automatically benefit from that SME2 acceleration I mentioned. It significantly lowers the barrier for developers. They can create really sophisticated AI experiences that are not only faster and more responsive, but also, importantly, inherently more private, because more of the processing is happening right there on your phone.
Makes sense. Okay, moving on from ARM, let's talk Qualcomm, their Snapdragon 8 Elite chip. This one's getting a lot of buzz, particularly around this idea of agentic AI. What does that actually mean?
Right, agentic AI, it's a term Qualcomm is pushing. It basically describes AI assistants that can do more than just react to simple commands. They're designed to truly perceive the world around them, reason about it, and then, crucially, act on your behalf within your environment. Think proactive, multi-step tasks.
Okay, so less reactive, more proactive. How does the chip enable that?
Well, it's partly about raw power, sure. It uses an advanced 3-nanometer manufacturing process. These chips are getting incredibly tiny and efficient. It has custom Oryon CPUs hitting speeds up to 4.32 gigahertz, which is like a 45% jump in CPU speed alone.
Wow.
But the really critical piece is its revised Hexagon NPU. That's their neural processing unit, the dedicated AI brain. It features what they call a fused AI accelerator, and it's specifically optimized for running large language models, LLMs, and also large action models, or LAMs. These are the complex AI models needed for that sophisticated multi-step reasoning that allows an agent to actually do things for you, not just answer questions.
You mentioned perception as key for these agents. I heard there's something really different about how Qualcomm's chip handles the camera feed, something about direct access for the NPU. Tell me about that, because that sounds like a big deal, especially for things like Google's Project Astra.
It is a huge deal. That direct connection between the NPU and the image sensor feed is honestly a total game changer. It fundamentally transforms the phone's camera from just a picture-taking tool into a real-time contextual sensor for the AI.
Okay.
So for something like Project Astra, which Google envisions as this multimodal, always-aware assistant using both camera and microphone,
right,
this direct pipeline dramatically cuts down latency, the delay, and also saves a lot of power. It's what makes that kind of ambient, always-on perception actually practical on a phone you carry around all day. Even the slightly lower tier 8's Gen 4 version of this chip shows a 44% faster AI performance compared to its predecessor. It really shows where their focus is, like real-time intelligence.
And that tight integration, it doesn't just help with understanding the world in real time, does it? It impacts photos, too.
Absolutely. The Spectra Image Signal Processor, the ISP, which handles image processing, is also tightly coupled with that NPU. It can handle massive 320 megapixel images, which is insane.
320 megapixels.
Yeah. But beyond just resolution, this tight coupling enables things like real-time video enhancements as you're shooting, and this incredible ability to segment photos into, well, they say virtually unlimited layers.
What does that mean, segmenting into layers?
Imagine taking a portrait. The AI can instantly identify and isolate the person's hair, their face, their shirt, the background, maybe even a specific object they're holding. And treat each one as a separate layer. Then you or the AI can enhance each layer individually, maybe sharpen the eyes, soften the skin slightly, blur the background more, tweak the color of the shirt all independently for a really polished, almost studio quality result automatically.
That's pretty amazing. Okay, so ARM and Qualcomm are pushing hard, but they're not the only players, right? Samsung and MediaTek must be responding.
Oh, definitely. The competition is fierce. Samsung's Exynos 2500 chip, it's also built on a cutting-edge 3-nanometer process, uses something called Gate All Around, or GAA, which is technically advanced. It boasts 59 TOPS.
How does that compare?
Well, it's a solid 39% improvement over their previous generation, the Exynos 2400. And Samsung is explicitly targeting that power towards on-device generative AI features. Things like sophisticated photo editing, removing objects from pictures, real-time video enhancements, and doing translations instantly, all without needing to send data to the cloud. They mentioned something like 24,000 MSC capability, which relates to the complexity of AI operations it can handle.
Okay. And MediaTek?
MediaTek is aiming really high. Their upcoming Dimensity 9500, based on leaks and rumors, is targeting potentially up to 100 TOPS.
100 TOPS.
Yeah, a big number. They seem to be achieving this with a completely redesigned NPU, signaling they want to be a major force in running those large language models directly on the device and also in real-time AI video processing.
Okay, so let's pull this hardware section together. Listening to all this, it feels like one trend is crystal clear for 2025. The whole competition has shifted, hasn't it? It's not just about capturing more data anymore, like taking a super high-resolution photo. It's about intelligently processing and understanding that data right there, in real time. We've really, truly moved on from the megapixel wars.
We absolutely have. It's the dawn of the TOPS race now.
The TOPS race. So just to quickly recap the key players from what we've gathered. Qualcomm's Snapdragon 8 Elite.
Engineered for that agentic AI concept, big focus on direct sensor access for the NPU, really optimized for LLMs and those large action models.
Samsung Exynos 2500.
Sitting at 59 TOPS, focusing heavily on-device generative stuff, photo and video editing, translation, all without the cloud.
MediaTek Dimensity 9500.
The rumored powerhouse, potentially hitting 100 TOPS, looks strong for on-device LLMs and real-time AI video.
And we can't forget Apple, their A19 Pro chip.
Right, that's what powers their Apple Intelligence features. It has a 16-core neural engine, and Apple claims it's twice as fast as the previous A17 Pro chip. Their focus seems squarely on running their own on-device foundation models and powering that revamped, smarter Siri.
So the bottom line for you, the listener, is that your next phone, it isn't just taking slightly sharper pictures. It's actually thinking more intelligently right there on the device itself, making your daily life smoother, more personal, more proactive.
Yeah.
And those raw NPU numbers, those TOPS figures, are what's driving it.
Precisely.
Okay, that hardware foundation is critical. Now, let's shift gears and look at this software and strategy layer. This brings us to a new kind of battleground, what we're calling the ecosystem Cold War, Google's ubiquitous intelligence versus Apple's private intelligence. Because these incredible hardware advancements, they're really underpinning a huge strategic fight between Google and Apple, right? And they represent two fundamentally different philosophies for mobile AI.
Absolutely. Two very distinct approaches.
Let's start with Google. Their strategy, which they really laid out at their I.O. conference in 2025, feels like a real gambit. It seems to be all about leveraging their massive cloud AI power and their, frankly, unparalleled data ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Their data advantage is huge.
To deliver this ubiquitous, proactive, almost agentic AI experience across all your devices, not just the phone.
That's exactly their play. The vision relies heavily on extremely powerful cloud models, like their Gemini 2.5 Pro, for the really deep reasoning tasks. Think about that example they showed, converting a simple hand-drawn sketch into a working app prototype. That needs serious cloud compute.
Right.
Meanwhile, they use Gemini Nano, a smaller model, to handle the efficient, quick tasks directly on the device. But the star of their show, really, is Project Astra.
Astra. Tell us more about that. It sounds ambitious.
It is. It's positioned as the ultimate expression of their vision. A multimodal AI assistant, meaning it understands text, voice, and crucially, vision via the camera that also has memory, allowing it to recall past interactions and context. It uses the phone's camera and microphone to perceive the world in real time.
So, like that scenario you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. Point your phone at your pantry. Astra identifies the ingredients. You ask for a recipe using them. It finds one, notices you're missing something, adds it to your shopping list, and could even potentially order it for delivery all through a natural conversation with this OS-level AI agent.
That's incredibly powerful. But it sounds like it relies heavily on the cloud for that deep understanding and action planning, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't that raise potential issues, maybe latency or even privacy concerns compared to keeping everything on the device?
That's the crucial trade-off, and it really highlights the core difference between Google and Apple's philosophies. For Google, the sheer utility, the power, the ubiquity of having this cloud-augmented AI that draws from their vast data ecosystem that seems to outweigh the potential concerns, at least in their strategic bet, This approach could also lead to a big shift for developers, maybe towards an API-first model, where the AI itself becomes the primary way users interact with services, changing how value is delivered. And you see this vision reflected in Android 16, codenamed Baklava, features like on-device scam call detection, yes, but also real-time lock screen updates powered by Cloud Context, generative stickers in Gboard, enhanced Google Photos editing. It's a blend.
And didn't you mention Google Search's AI mode using personal context? Well, that sounds like it leans heavily on user data from other services.
Absolutely. It explicitly leverages data from things like your Gmail, calendar, maybe even maps to provide hyper-relevant search results. It showcases Google's unique advantage, integrating data across its massive suite of services to understand your personal context deeply. Privacy advocates definitely raise eyebrows, but Google argues it delivers unparalleled relevance.
Okay, so that's Google's play. Powerful, ubiquitous, cloud-connected intelligence. Now let's look at Apple. They seem to be building, well, you called it a fortress earlier. Their counter-strategy, unveiled at WWDC 2025, is Apple Intelligence. And it feels like it's built entirely on this privacy moat concept, right?
Precisely. Apple's messaging is crystal clear. This is AI you don't have to trust because the heavy lifting, the core processing, happens locally right on your device. It's a very deliberate privacy moat.
So what's the core of Apple Intelligence then? How does it work?
The heart of it is an on-device foundation model. This powers a completely revamped Siri, making it much more context-aware and capable. It also handles features like summarizing text, improving your writing, and understanding visual information in photos and on screen.
But what if a request is too complex for the on-device chip? Does it just fail?
No, that's where they introduce something called private cloud compute. It's designed as a secure, stateless extension. If a query needs more power, it can be sent to servers running on Apple Silicon. But critically, Apple insists the data isn't stored, isn't used for training, and isn't associated with your identity. They're even inviting independent security researchers to verify these claims.
Stateless, meaning it forgets everything immediately after processing.
Exactly. It's designed to be a privacy-preserving way to tap into more powerful cloud resources only when absolutely necessary, without compromising their core on-device promise.
Now, here's something that sounded potentially huge strategically. Apple giving developers direct access to that on-device LLM through a new foundation models framework. Why is that such a big deal? What does it enable?
This could be a masterstroke. By giving developers easy native access in Swift, their programming language, to the powerful on-device AI, Apple is offering a massive incentive, especially for industries with really strict data privacy and compliance rules. Think healthcare, finance, legal tech.
Ah, right. Places where sending sensitive data to the cloud is often a non-starter.
Exactly. Apple is basically positioning iOS as the secure platform for building high-stakes AI applications. You see this philosophy woven through all the new iOS 26 features. Things like live translation happening directly within messages and FaceTime calls, AI helping create polls, a smarter spotlight search that understands context better, the Workout Buddy feature on Apple Watch giving personalized feedback, and even fun generative things like Genmoji and the Image Playground app, all designed to operate within Apple's strong privacy framework.
Okay, so pulling these two giants together, the strategic fault line seems really clear now. It boils down to power versus privacy as the main competitive axis, doesn't it?
I think that captures it perfectly.
Google is offering incredibly powerful, deeply knowledgeable cloud-augmented AI. The trade-off inherent in that approach involves sharing more data and relying on their cloud infrastructure. Apple, on the other hand, is offering superior privacy and security by prioritizing on-device processing. The potential trade-off there might be hitting the limits of local hardware for the most complex, cutting-edge AI tasks, even with private cloud compute as a fallback.
Absolutely. Google is betting heavily that users will ultimately prioritize the sheer utility and convenience of an all-knowing, deeply integrated assistant that draws context from everything.
All Apple.
Apple is betting on user peace of mind. They believe users will prioritize knowing their personal data is largely staying on their device, under their control. This fundamental, almost ideological difference, it's going to shape mobile product development and ultimately your choices as a consumer for years to come.
It's a fascinating divergence. Okay, let's move on from the platform wars and talk about what this actually feels like for us, the users. This brings us to the dawn of the agentic age, redefining the user experience. Because all this hardware muscle and these competing platform strategies, they're not just abstract concepts. They're delivering genuinely intelligent, proactive, and deeply personalized experiences right on our phones.
Yeah, the smartphone is really evolving. It's becoming less like a toolbox of static apps and more like a dynamic, context-aware companion.
And a big part of that is this shift from reactive to proactive experiences. Mm. Hyper-personalization, right? I saw an estimate that something like 72% of mobile apps are expected to rely on AI for personalization by 2025. That's huge.
It is, and it goes beyond just showing you ads you might like. A key breakthrough is how apps are now using predictive analytics to genuinely anticipate your needs.
Like how? Give me some examples.
Okay, think about context-aware interfaces. Your phone's home screen or key apps might subtly change based on your location, maybe showing work apps when you arrive at the office, or entertainment apps when you get home. Or your calendar app noticing a potential scheduling conflict based on real-time traffic and proactively suggesting a reschedule.
Oh, that'd be useful.
Right. Or e-commerce apps not just showing related items, but suggesting the next best action, maybe reminding you to reorder something you usually buy around this time, or offering a personalized discount on an item you viewed earlier. Even things like dynamic pricing, where the cost of a ride share or a flight might adjust in real time based on demand patterns analyzed by AI, personalized just for you.
And generative AI takes personalization even further, right? It's not just predicting, it's creating stuff just for you.
Exactly. That travel app example we touched on earlier, instead of just offering preset tour packages, it could generate a completely unique day-by-day itinerary for your trip to, say, Rome, perfectly blending museum visits you'd like with specific types of local restaurants you prefer, maybe even factoring in your walking pace. All generated on the fly.
Wow.
The whole idea of a static fixed app interface is kind of becoming obsolete. We're moving towards fluid, dynamically generated UIs tailored to the individual user and their current context.
Okay, so apps are getting smarter. What about the assistants themselves? Siri, Google Assistant. You mentioned they're evolving into agents. What does that mean in practice?
It means they're moving beyond simple command and response. This agentic evolution is key. They're starting to understand complex multi-step requests and can automate workflows across different apps without you having to manually jump between them.
Like the Tokyo vacation example.
Precisely. You could potentially say, plan an entire vacation to Tokyo for the first week of October, find flights under $1,000, book a hotel near Shinjuku Station with good reviews, and suggest 3 top-rated ramen spots. And the agent could, theoretically, orchestrate all of that searching flights, checking hotel APIs, querying review sites, maybe even making reservations all within one continuous conversation.
That's a leap.
It is. And you see steps towards this with Apple's revamped Siri having cross-app context awareness. Remember the example. Summarize the email I just got from Jane about the project and add the main action items to my reminders. That requires understanding context across mail and reminders. Google's Gemini agent mode is explicitly designed for similar multi-step planning based on high-level goals you state.
And these agents are becoming multimodal too, right? Understanding more than just voice.
Yes, that's crucial. Processing text, voice, and images simultaneously allows them to understand your intent and the surrounding environmental context much more deeply. Point your camera at something and ask a question about it, for instance. No more having to describe everything verbally or type it all out.
Okay, let's talk cameras.
Yeah.
AI has obviously been impacting phone photography for a while, but it sounds like it's hitting a whole new level now. The intelligent eye, as you called it?
It really has. It's moved beyond just basic enhancements. On-device NPUs, like we discussed in the hardware section, are now executing really sophisticated computational photography techniques. Things like advanced HDR blending, HDR Plus, incredible low-light performance night mode, and AI-driven portrait mode with realistic background blur, all with much greater precision and speed.
How does it work? Is it just algorithms?
It's algorithms supercharged by dedicated AI hardware. The MPU can instantly analyze the entire scene, recognize different subjects, people, pets, landscapes, food, understand the lighting conditions, and then optimize camera settings before you even press the shutter. And remember that Snapdragon 8 Elite example.
Segmenting the image into layers.
Exactly. The ability to break down an image into semantic layers, face, hair, clothes, background, and enhance each element individually. That allows for a level of automated polishing that was previously only possible with manual desktop software. No more one-size-fits-all processing.
And then there's the editing after you take the picture.
Yeah.
Generative AI seems to be revolutionizing that too.
Oh, completely. Tools like Google's Magic Eraser or Adobe's Generative Fill integrated into phones let you seamlessly remove unwanted objects or even add new elements just by describing them. Apple has similar features like Cleanup and things like the Image Wand in Apple Notes turning a rough finger sketch into a polished graphic. That's generative AI making creativity more accessible.
Does this extend to video as well?
Yes, definitely. We're seeing predictive video stabilization that anticipates motion for smoother footage. And AI is becoming embedded directly into mobile video editing apps. Think CapCut, LumaFusion, Filmorigo. They offer automatic caption generation, AI-powered color grading to give your videos a specific look, smart cropping that automatically keeps the subject centered even if you move the phone, and even auto-edit modes that can analyze a bunch of raw clips and generate a shareable highlight reel automatically. It's like having a basic video editor built right in.
Okay, another area where AI seems crucial is augmented reality, or AR. For a while, mobile AR felt a bit like a gimmick, but AI seems to be making it genuinely useful now.
AI is absolutely the critical catalyst for AR. Why? Because for AR to work well, the device needs to understand the real world it's overlaying digital information onto.
Makes sense.
So AI provides that scene understanding. Algorithms for object recognition let an AR app identify a specific landmark and overlay historical facts. Surface detection allows you to place virtual furniture accurately on your floor. Text recognition can translate signs in real time through your camera view. Remember the router example. Recognizing your specific model and showing interactive 3D setup steps right on top of it. That's AI-powered AR. Apple's ArtKit platform heavily leverages AI for much better object tracking, realistic lighting on virtual objects, and even full-body motion capture using just the phone's camera.
And this is having a real impact in areas like shopping, right?
Huge impact. Virtual try-ons for clothes or makeup are becoming common. Being able to view a 3D model of a sofa in your actual living room before buying it is incredibly useful. Some retail stores are even using AR mirrors. Research shows these can increase purchase intention by around 17% and also help reduce product returns because people have a better sense of what they're buying.
What's next for AR? Is it just better apps or something more?
We're starting to see generative AR tools emerge, like Spline, which lets you create 3D objects or scenes just by describing them in natural language. And the longer-term vision involves lightweight AR glasses. Google's working on Android XR, powered by Gemini, for example, that could provide a constant, context-aware, informational overlay on your view of the world. A truly blended reality, but that's still a bit further out for mainstream adoption.
Got it. One last area of user experience. Health and wellness. Wearables like smartwatches seem to be leading a big shift here, moving from just tracking steps to proactive health monitoring powered by AI.
Yes, this is a major paradigm shift. We're moving from healthcare being primarily reactive, treating problems after they occur, towards proactive wellness and prevention. And AI on wearables is key to that.
How so? What's the AI doing?
Well, first, you have increasingly advanced biosensors in smartwatches, and now even smart patches things, measuring ECG for heart rhythm, blood oxygen levels, skin temperature, potentially even continuous glucose for diabetics. What's noteworthy, and links back to our earlier discussion, is that the embedded AI chips on these wearables often process this highly sensitive data directly on the device.
Ah, for privacy and reliability.
Exactly. Keeps sensitive health data off the cloud where possible and ensures core monitoring functions even if you're offline. But the real power comes from predictive analytics running on that data. AI algorithms can detect subtle patterns over time that might indicate an increased risk of conditions like atrial fibrillation or a potential hypoglycemic event in a diabetic, sometimes before the person even feels symptoms. It's like having an early warning system on your wrist.
That's incredible. And beyond just warnings, can it make the experience more empathetic?
That's a great way to put it. This passive sensing from wearables, combined with data from your phone's sensors, enables more empathetic applications. Imagine a music app noticing your heart rate is elevated and subtly adjusting the playlist to something more calming. Or a productivity app detecting signs of stress and suggesting a quick breathing exercise. Apple Watch's Workout Buddy feature is another example, using generative AI to provide personalized voice feedback and encouragement during your run, tailored specifically to your real-time performance and fitness goals.
It's amazing how deeply AI is weaving itself into all these different facets of the mobile experience. Okay, so we understand the hardware, the platform strategies, and the user experience shifts, but how are developers actually building all this stuff? Let's talk about the developers' new toolkit APIs, SDKs, and the AI-assisted workflow. Because this explosion of AI features is enabled by powerful tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And AI itself is even changing how software gets made.
Absolutely. The tools are evolving rapidly.
Let's start with Android. If I'm an Android developer wanting to add AI features, what does Google offer me?
Google provides a kind of tiered toolkit, depending on what you need. For relatively simple, common generative tasks, things like summarizing text within your app or proofreading user input, the easiest entry point is often the on-device generative AI APIs within MLKit. These are typically powered by that Gemini Nano model we mentioned earlier.
Okay, simple stuff on device. Mm. What if I need something more custom or powerful?
Right. If you've trained your own custom AI model, you'd likely use tools like LeaderT, which is part of Google Play Services, to run it efficiently on the device. And for the really demanding tasks that need serious horsepower or access to Google's latest and greatest models, developers can use the Vertex AI and Firebase SDK. That gives them cloud access to powerful models like Gemini 1.5 Pro for complex reasoning or Imagen 3 for high-quality image generation.
And how do they get these models onto users' phones?
Google Play has a specific service now, Google Play for on-device AI, which helps streamline the deployment and updating of these AI models as part of the standard Android app bundle distribution process.
Yeah.
It makes managing potentially large AI models much easier for developers.
Okay, so a layered approach from Google. Now, what about Apple? Their toolkit must reflect that privacy-first on-device philosophy we talked about.
It absolutely does. The big headline addition for developers in 2025 was the Foundation Models Framework.
That's the one giving direct access to the on-device LLM.
Exactly. It provides developers with direct, native Swift code access to the same powerful on-device large language model that powers Apple Intelligence features like the revamped Siri and summarization tools. They highlighted how you could add text summarization or content generation to your app with literally just like three lines of code in some cases.
Wow, three lines.
Yeah, and the key selling point is that because it's running the on-device model, it's inherently private and works completely offline, which, as we discussed, is a huge draw for certain types of apps.
What about running custom models on iOS?
For that, Core ML remains the bedrock. It's Apple's framework for optimizing and running custom machine learning models efficiently on device hardware. It's tightly integrated with their other frameworks like Vision for image analysis, Speech for voice processing, and ARKit for augmented reality. And they also offer Create ML, which is a remarkably intuitive Mac application that lets developers or even non-experts train custom ML models for specific tasks, often without needing deep ML expertise.
I remember you mentioning federated learning with Core ML, too.
Yes, that's another important piece of their privacy puzzle. Core ML supports federated learning, which is a technique that allows models deployed across many user devices to learn and improve collectively without the user's raw data ever leaving their individual devices. The model updates, not the data, are shared and aggregated. It's a key privacy-preserving way to make AI smarter over time.
Okay, so developers have these powerful new APIs and frameworks. But AI isn't just a feature in apps anymore, is it? It's also changing the process of building the apps themselves, the AI co-pilot idea.
This is arguably just as transformative, if not more so, for the industry. AI is rapidly becoming an indispensable partner in the software development lifecycle. It's automating tedious tasks, accelerating workflows, and fundamentally changing how developers work.
How specifically? Like autocomplete on steroids?
It started like that, but it's way beyond basic code completion now. Tools like Gemini integrated into Android Studio or GitHub Copilot X powered by OpenAI models. These are becoming sophisticated AI pair programmers. They provide real-time, context-aware suggestions, not just for single lines, but for entire functions or blocks of code. They can help refactor existing code, explain complex sections, even translate code between different programming languages.
So it writes code for you?
It can draft significant amounts of code, yes. But even more advanced agents are emerging that can manage entire workflows. Imagine describing a new feature you want in plain English, like add a button that lets users share their score to social media. The AI could potentially interpret that request, write the necessary UI code, generate the backend logic, write corresponding tests to ensure it works, and even initiate the deployment process. It's compressing the entire development cycle.
That's incredible. What about finding bugs? Can AI help there too?
Definitely. AI is being used for debugging and quality assurance, or QA. There are AI-guided tools that can analyze code and runtime behavior to pinpoint the likely causes of bugs much faster than manual inspection. And we're seeing vision-based AI agents that can actually interact with an app's user interface, just like a human would, tapping buttons, entering text, swiping screens to perform intelligent, automated testing. They can even learn user flows and generate adaptive test scripts automatically.
Wow. So if AI is doing more of the coding and testing, what does that mean for the human developer's role? Are we all going to become prompt engineers?
That's the million-dollar question. The archetype of the developer is shifting. While foundational coding skills remain important, yes, expertise in prompt engineering, crafting effective natural language instructions for AI models, is becoming crucial. So is the skill of being an AI orchestrator, knowing how to effectively combine different AI services and APIs to build complex applications. The focus shifts slightly from writing every line of low-level algorithm to expertly guiding and composing these powerful AI building blocks.
And this probably ties into the rise of low-code and no-code platforms, too.
Absolutely. Platforms like Flutterflow or Microsoft Power Apps are increasingly using generative AI to allow people with little to no traditional coding experience to build functional applications simply by describing what they want in natural language or using visual drag-and-drop interfaces. It massively democratizes app creation.
That democratization sounds great, but you mentioned something earlier about a potential performance gap. What did you mean by that?
Well, while these AI tools and low-code platforms make it much easier to build generic apps quickly, there's likely going to be a growing gap between those quickly assembled apps and applications where developers have deeply optimized the AI models, fine-tuned the performance for specific hardware, and carefully crafted the user experience. That level of optimization and nuance delivered by skilled human developers leveraging AI tools will likely become a key differentiator for premium user experiences. Getting the last 10% of performance and polish might still require significant human expertise.
That makes sense. The barrier to entry is lower, but the ceiling for quality is still high. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground hardware, platforms, UX, developer tools. Now let's tackle the really critical, sometimes thorny, final section, navigating the new frontier challenges, ethics, and strategic imperatives for 2026 and beyond. Because as powerful as this mobile AI gets, its rapid spread brings some significant challenges, right? Making ethics and user trust absolutely vital.
Paramount. They're not just nice to have anymore. They're core business imperatives.
One big issue is the black box problem. As AI on our phones starts making more consequential decisions, maybe suggesting medical actions based on wearable data or influencing financial eligibility through an app, if we don't understand why the AI made a certain decision, that undermines trust, doesn't it? And creates huge accountability gaps.
Precisely. That lack of transparency is a major hurdle. And the response to that is the field of explainable AI, or XAI. The goal here is to build AI systems that can make their decision-making processes transparent and understandable to humans.
So the AI can tell you why it suggested something.
Ideally, yes. Or at least provide insights into the key factors that influenced its output. An app that can explain its reasoning, even in simplified terms, immediately builds more trust. It's becoming not just a competitive advantage, but increasingly a compliance necessity, especially as regulations around AI transparency start to emerge globally. It's moving from black box to maybe glass box.
Okay, explainability is key. What about the fuel for all this AI data? We touched on the privacy tension between Google and Apple strategies. Even with on-device processing, there are still challenges around things like informed consent for how data is used, right?
Absolutely. Consent is complex, especially when data is collected passively by sensors. But beyond just privacy, a perhaps even more insidious issue is algorithmic bias.
Bias. How does that creep in?
Crucially, the vast datasets used to train these powerful AI models often reflect existing societal biases. If a dataset predominantly features images of people with lighter skin tones, a facial recognition model trained on it might perform poorly for people with darker skin. If voice data mainly comes from speakers of one particular accent, a voice assistant might struggle to understand others.
So the AI inherits and can even amplify human biases.
Exactly. This can lead to genuinely discriminatory outcomes in really sensitive areas, hiring tools, loan applications, even computational photography, making certain groups look consistently worse in photos. It means there needs to be a massive, concerted effort on careful dataset curation, rigorous auditing of models for bias before deployment, and an ongoing commitment to fairness throughout the AI lifecycle. This isn't just a moral imperative. Biased AI is often simply bad AI, it doesn't work well for everyone.
It sounds like building responsible AI is becoming almost a brand attribute in itself.
I think that's right. We're starting to see the emergence of ethical AI as a potential market differentiator, much like organic food or sustainably sourced materials became. Consumers, especially as they become more aware of these issues, will likely start seeking out and potentially paying a premium for products and services they perceive as being built on principles of fairness, transparency, and robust privacy. Trust becomes the currency.
So given these challenges and opportunities, what are the key strategic recommendations for people involved in building this future, say for product leaders?
Okay, for product leaders, number one, prioritize trust and safety from day one. Embed XAI principles and transparent UI design. Actively leverage privacy as a competitive differentiator. Don't just treat it as a compliance checkbox. And strategically, prepare for that shift from individual apps towards integrated AI agents. Think about an API-first strategy for your services.
What about developers on the ground?
For developers, it's about continuous learning. Mastering prompt engineering, yes, but also understanding how to effectively orchestrate different AI models and APIs. Crucially, focus on optimizing models for specific hardware to deliver the best performance and efficiency, and embrace those AI-assisted coding tools. They're here to stay and will make you more productive.
And marketers, how does this change their world?
Marketing needs a rethink, too. The classic search engine optimization, SEO, needs to evolve into answer engine optimization, or AEO. How do you ensure your brand or product information is surfaced effectively by these conversational AI assistants? Marketers also need to explore AI-native channels for brand engagement, perhaps through custom AI agents or integrations.
Looking ahead now, 2026 and beyond, the pace of AI development is just relentless. Where is this all heading? We talk about agentic AI.
The trajectory seems clear. We're seeing these early, sometimes stumbling agents today, but they're rapidly evolving. By 2026, we'll likely see highly capable, perhaps more specialized AI agents becoming commonplace on mobile.
And the logical endpoint of that evolution?
If you extrapolate, the logical endpoint seems to be a fundamental shift from our current device-centric computing model where we interact with discrete apps on a phone towards a truly agent-centric model.
Agent-centric?
Yeah.
Meaning the AI is primary?
Yes. Your phone as a piece of hardware becomes less important than the single personalized ambient AI agent that resides on it and potentially across other devices. This agent perceives the world around you, understands your context deeply, and acts proactively on your behalf. The primary interface shifts away from tapping icons towards being predominantly conversational, voice, text, maybe even gestures and visual, and deeply proactive. It's arguably the most significant potential change in how humans interact with computers since the invention of the graphical user interface, GUI.
That completely reframes the old open versus closed ecosystem debate, doesn't it? It's not just about whether you can customize your Android phone versus the streamlined experience of iOS anymore.
Exactly. The debate for the AI era becomes much more fundamental. It's about who ultimately controls the intelligence that mediates your interactions with the digital and increasingly the physical world. Is it you with powerful AI running primarily on your device under your control? Or is it the corporation with the core intelligence residing in its cloud, operating based on its priorities and business models? This core question about data sovereignty, user autonomy, and the control of intelligence, that's what will define the next chapter of personal technology.
Wow. Okay, so let's quickly recap where we've been today. Cool. We started with the hardware revolution. The silicon brains powering this shift, the end of the megapixel wars and the dawn of the TOPS race, driven by companies like ARM, Qualcomm, Samsung, MediaTek, and Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Then we explored the strategic ecosystem Cold War. Google's bet on ubiquitous cloud-augmented intelligence versus Apple's fortress of privacy-first on-device AI.
The power versus privacy axis.
Exactly. We saw how this is completely reshaping the user experience, ushering in the agentic age with hyper-personalization, proactive assistance, incredibly intelligent cameras, genuinely useful AR, and proactive health monitoring.
Transforming daily interactions.
We looked at the new toolkit available to developers, the APIs and SDKs enabling these features, and how AI itself is becoming a co-pilot in the development process.
Changing how tech is built.
And finally, we navigated the new frontier of challenges and ethics, the need for explainable AI, the persistent issues of privacy and bias, and the strategic imperatives for everyone involved.
Trust and responsibility being key.
So, this deep dive, it wasn't just about listing facts and figures. We really hope it's given you, our listener, the insights and the context to understand what's truly driving the mobile world you live in right now, and maybe more importantly, a clearer sense of what's coming next down the road.
Yeah, hopefully connecting the dots.
And to leave you with something to think about, as our mobile devices become these increasingly intelligent agents, things that can perceive our world, reason about it, and act on our behalf, how much autonomy, how much control are we truly willing to hand over to them? And maybe even more profoundly, in a world where AI mediates so much of our reality, what will ownership truly mean for our digital lives in the future? Something to ponder, perhaps, next time your phone feels just a little bit too smart.